The year was 541 CE, around 70 years after the fall of the Western Roman Empire. To the east, however, the Romans carried on their legacy under a new name, the Byzantine Empire. Their leader was Justinian the Great, revered for his government organization, codification of laws, and most importantly, reconquering the city of Rome for around half a century. The empire was thriving under his leadership, and all seemed to be going well. The biggest danger the Byzantines faced were the invasions led by various Germanic tribes as the empire attempted to reconquer Western Europe. However, there was another danger that posed an even greater threat to the empire. For the next 8 years of Justinian's reign, a deadly plague swept through the empire, killing civilians by the thousands. But the outbreak did not limit itself to the Mediterranean. Soon, the disease traveled throughout North Africa and Europe, with some studies finding that it reached as far as the British Isles. Along the way, over a quarter of the empire's population died, with around 25 to 50 million casualties in Europe alone. This dreadful outbreak is now dubbed the Plague of Justinian. Welcome to A History of Pandemics. I'm Megan, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we delve into some of history's most devastating epidemics and pandemics. To kick off the show, we will take a look into the Plague of Justinian, the first documented pandemic in history. This outbreak is also known as the first plague pandemic, as many centuries later, there were additional pandemics caused by the same strain of disease. You can find all episodes of the podcast for free on Spotify or wherever else you listen to podcasts. To listen to A History of Pandemics, just click on the app and type in A History of Pandemics in the search bar. And now, back to the episode. The disease that ravaged through Justinian's empire is known as the plague. But in order to understand the plague, we must first discuss what caused it. The story starts with Yersinia pestis, a type of zoonotic bacteria which was thought to originate in China. Earliest known cases of Yersinia pestis infections can date back as far as the Bronze Age, or around 5,000 years ago. Studies have even shown that a prehistoric pandemic caused by Yersinia pestis could have contributed to the decline in Neolithic societies in Europe and Asia. One of the reasons Yersinia pestis became so deadly is that it is a facultative anaerobe. Facultative anaerobes can survive with or without oxygen, allowing for Yersinia pestis to thrive in a variety of locations. In addition, there are three main strains of Yersinia pestis: Yersinia pestis antiqua, Yersinia pestis medievalis, and Yersinia pestis orientalis. These three strains are responsible for the Justinian plague, the Black Death, and modern plague outbreaks, respectively. Although Yersinia pestis is deadly, it cannot operate on its own. It needs a vector to help transmit the plague, and enter the flea. There are around 131 known species of flea that are known to transmit the plague to rodents and humans. Yersinia pestis then stays in the flea's digestive system, where it forms a black mass. Unlike other organisms, however, fleas do not seem to be negatively affected by Yersinia pestis. This is because when Yersinia pestis enters the system of any other organism, it releases a toxin called Yersinia murine toxin, also known as YMT. This toxin is highly deadly to other animals, but is actually necessary for Yersinia pestis to survive in the digestive system of fleas. The final part to this biological menage a trois is the rat. When fleas feed on other animals, such as rats, by biting them, it allows Yersinia pestis to enter the bloodstream of the rat. After that, the bacteria begins its assault on its host. In addition to infecting rats and humans, Yersinia pestis is also known to cause disease in animals such as squirrels, voles, prairie dogs, and chipmunks. Now, although the fleas and rats are the most notorious cause of the plague spreading, why did the plague of Justinian occur when it did? Studies have shown that climate change plays a huge role in the fluctuation of rodent populations, and thus directly affect the population of Yersinia pestis as well. According to the University of Plymouth, during the time that the Justinian plague began, the climate was warmer and wetter than usual, which increased the rat population. When there is an increase in rats, the greater the likelihood that fleas will follow and feed on other animals, such as dogs, cats, and of course, humans. Now, it's easy to blame the fleas and rats for spreading the plague, but once humans became infected with Yersinia pestis, it's extremely easy for people to spread the plague to others as well. Some ways human transmission could occur is by being in contact with contaminated fluids or tissue and breathing in infectious droplets. And we cannot forget the classic flea bites and having dormant fleas hiding in cloths, ready to strike at any given moment in time. Before we go into detail about the symptoms of the plague, we must first establish that there are three main types of plague. They are bubonic plague, pneumonic plague, and septicemic plague. In general, when one is infected with the plague, common symptoms include fever, headache, chills, and nausea. What differentiates these three strains of plague is where in the body Yersinia pestis affects the most. Bubonic plague attacks the lymphatic system, and when the bacteria reaches the lymph nodes, they create the infamous buboes, the most recognizable symptom of a plague infection. Swollen lymph nodes can range from the size of an almond to as large as an orange. Pneumonic plague affects the lungs, and symptoms are similar to that of other lung infections, such as coughing, chest pain, shortness of breath, and vomiting blood. Septicemic plague is arguably the most deadly form of plague because the bacteria is circulating throughout the bloodstream and can travel to any other part of the body. Bleeding into the skin and other organs are common, as well as necrosis, which means that the affected skin and tissue will turn black and die. Next up, the plague travels throughout the Byzantine Empire. One of the greatest achievements the Roman Empire had was establishing an intricate network of roads and trade routes spanning the continent. The city of Constantinople was also in a strategic location, bordering the Black Sea, Aegean Sea, and is also in close proximity to the Mediterranean Sea as well. Additionally, Constantinople was a hub for trade and commerce, with a population of around 300,000. On top of this, Justinian's army was busy conquering areas in Western Europe and North Africa, which means that large groups of soldiers and supplies traveled through the empire at a quick pace. Naturally, these factors made it very easy for the plague to spread quickly. According to Wendy Orent, the Justinian plague originated in Ethiopia and traveled to Pelusium in Egypt via Byzantine trade routes. According to John Frith, once the disease reached the Mediterranean, it easily traveled to areas such as Gaza, Jerusalem, and Antioch due to the Mediterranean's role as a primary sea trade route. The plague then reached Constantinople by 541 CE. Interestingly, the plague rarely struck the countryside or northern Europe. Thus, we can infer that the black rat, also called Rattus rattus, was the main vector, because they stayed near the ports and ships that carried the disease. At the peak of the pandemic, scholars estimate that there were around 5,000 deaths per day in Constantinople. That being said, the exact number of deaths is unknown. According to the Byzantine historian Procopius, the death toll per day climbed as high as 10,000, but this cannot be proven. What is certain, however, is that the plague ravaged the Byzantine Empire. No one was spared. In fact, even Justinian himself contracted the disease, although he recovered. Additionally, all three types of plague, bubonic, pneumonic, and septicemic, were thought to have been present during this outbreak. Dead bodies filled the streets of Constantinople, and Justinian had his soldiers also double as gravediggers to dispose of the corpses. Procopius also notes that when there was no space to bury the dead, the corpses sat out in the open, and that the entire city smelled like the dead. Treatment for the plague was often futile. The best way to survive the plague was just to have a strong immune system and a lot of luck. That being said, there were a variety of cures that the Byzantines tried to save themselves from the disease. If you were lucky, you could afford a doctor to prescribe some medicine for you. Byzantine doctors at the time followed the teachings of Galen, a physician who lived in the 3rd century CE and whose teachings were the foundation of medicine for more than 1,000 years. Galen's medical philosophy was based on heurism, which is the theory about how bodily fluids maintain balance in the human body. The most popular form of treatment to rebalance the humors was bloodletting, which is probably what Byzantine doctors did to treat plague victims. Naturally, bloodletting is heavily discouraged, regardless of whether one is sick or not, but bloodletting a plague victim would most definitely bring them closer to death. For most commoners, they had no choice but to use home remedies to attempt to cure themselves. Unfortunately, these treatments were basically useless or even straight up deadly. According to William Rosen, some common treatments included cold water baths, powders blessed by saints, and wearing magical amulets and rings. Some desperate plague victims even consumed alkaloids, which would most certainly kill them. The impact of the Justinian plague was extremely significant. Although the exact number of casualties cannot be determined, some historians say that there was as much as a 40% decrease in population. In addition, while the pandemic officially ended in 549 CE, there were still several minor outbreaks of the disease up until 750 CE. Because of the devastating losses, there were also food shortages, as there was no supply of farmers to keep up with growing food demands. Thus, additional people died of starvation if they hadn't been killed by the plague yet. Worker shortages also contributed to an economic recession, allowing inflation to soar while tax revenues plummeted. That being said, Justinian still continued to demand heavy taxes from his people. In Procopius's work, Secret History, he notes, "When pestilence swept through the whole known world, and notably the Roman Empire, wiping out most of the farming community and of necessity leaving a trail of desolation in its wake, Justinian showed no mercy towards the ruined freeholders. Even then, he did not refrain from demanding the annual tax, not only the amount at which he assessed each individual, but also the amount for which his deceased neighbors were liable." Some claim that the plague of Justinian was the sole reason that the power of the Byzantine Empire collapsed after the 6th century. While I would argue that the pandemic was merely a contributing factor to the Byzantine Empire's decline, it did weaken the empire's influence on a global scale. After Justinian's death, Germanic tribes such as the Goths and Ostrogoths reconquered the Italian peninsula. Italy was never reunited again until the late 19th century. The size of the empire also reduced over the centuries due to a weakened army. By 1453, when the Byzantine Empire finally collapsed after an invasion by the Ottoman Empire, the so-called Byzantine Empire was really just the city of Constantinople. Trade and commerce were also reduced, and other empires displaced Constantinople as the center of civilization. Thus, it is safe to say the plague of Justinian did weaken the empire permanently. Without this pandemic, the Byzantine Empire would have probably lasted much longer and hold a greater cultural impact than it already does. Thank you for listening to A History of Pandemics. Next episode, we will take a look at the most infamous epidemic in the New World, the Columban Exchange. All episodes of A History of Pandemics are available for free on Spotify. You can stream the podcast on your computer, phone, tablet, or any other electronic device wherever you are. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow the podcast on Spotify. See you next time.